The Life and Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby by Charles Dickens, performed by Patrick Horgan. Preface to the original edition, 1839. It has afforded the author great amusement and satisfaction during the progress of this work to learn from country friends and from a variety of ludicrous statements concerning himself in provincial newspapers that more than one Yorkshire schoolmaster lays claim to being the original of Mr. Squeers. One worthy, he has reason to believe, has actually consulted authorities learned in the law as to his having good grounds on which to rest an action for libel. Another has meditated a journey to London for the express purpose of committing an assault and battery upon his traducer. A third perfectly remembers being waited on last January 12th by two gentlemen, one of whom held him in conversation while the other took his likeness. And although Mr. Squeers has but one eye, and he has two, and the published sketch does not resemble him, whoever he may be, in any other respect, still he and all his friends and neighbours know at once for whom it is meant, because the character is so like him. While the author cannot but feel the full force of the compliment thus conveyed to him, he ventures to suggest that these contentions may arise from the fact that Mr. Squeers is the representative of a class and not of an individual. Where imposture, ignorance and brutal cupidity are the stock in trade of a small body of men, and one is described by these characteristics, all his fellows will recognize something belonging to themselves, and each will have a misgiving that the portrait is his own. To this general description, as to most others, there may be some exceptions, and although the author neither saw nor heard of any, in the course of an excursion which he made into Yorkshire before he commenced these adventures, or before or since, it affords him much more pleasure to assume their existence than to doubt it. He has dwelt thus long upon this point, because his object in calling public attention to the system would be very imperfectly fulfilled if he did not state now, in his own person, emphatically and earnestly, that Mr. Squeers and his school are faint and feeble pictures of an existing reality, purposely subdued and kept down, lest they should be deemed impossible. That there are upon record trials at law in which damages have been sought as a poor recompense for lasting agonies and disfigurements inflicted upon children by the treatment of the master in these places, involving such offensive and foul details of neglect, cruelty, and disease as no writer of fiction would have the boldness to imagine. And that, since he has been engaged upon these adventures, he has received from private quarters far beyond the reach of suspicion or distrust accounts of atrocities, in the perpetration of which upon neglected or repudiated children, these schools have been the main instruments, very far exceeding any that appear in these pages. To turn to a more pleasant subject, it may be right to say that there are two characters in this book which are drawn from life. It is remarkable that what we call the world, which is so very credulous in what professes to be true, is most incredulous in what it professes to be imaginary, and that while every day in real life will allow in one man no blemishes and in another no virtues, will seldom admit a very strongly marked character, either good or bad, in a fictitious narrative to be within the limits of probability. For this reason, they have been very slightly and imperfectly sketched. Those who take an interest in this tale will be glad to learn that the brothers Cheeryble live, that their liberal charity, their singleness of heart, their noble nature, and their unbounded benevolence are no creations of the author's brain, but are prompting every day and oftenest by stealth some munificent and generous deed in that town of which they are the pride and honour. It only now remains for the writer of these passages, with that feeling of regret with which we leave almost any pursuit that has for a long time occupied us and engaged our thoughts, and which is naturally augmented in such a case as this, when that pursuit has been surrounded by all that could animate and cheer him on, it only now remains for him, before abandoning his task, to bid his readers farewell. The author of a periodical performance, says Mackenzie, has indeed a claim to the attention and regard of his readers, more interesting than that of any other writer. Other writers submit their sentiments to their readers with the reserve and circumspection of him who has had time to prepare for a public appearance. He who has followed Horace's rule of keeping his book 9 years in his study must have withdrawn many an idea which in the warmth of composition he had conceived, and altered many an expression which in the hurry of writing he had set down. But the periodical essayist commits to his readers the feelings of the day in the language which those feelings have prompted. As he has delivered himself with the freedom of intimacy and the cordiality of friendship, he will naturally look for the indulgence which those relations may claim. And when he bids his readers adieu, will hope, as well as feel, the regrets of an acquaintance and the tenderness of a friend. With such feelings and such hopes, the periodical essayist, the author of these pages, now lays them before his readers in a completed form, flattering himself, like the writer just quoted, that on the 1st of next month they may miss his company at the accustomed time as something which used to be expected with pleasure, and think of the papers which on that day of so many past months they have read as the correspondence of one who wished their happiness and contributed to their amusement.